For decades now, there's been plenty of debate over the role of America's military as well as the country's role in international politics. A 2014 Pew Research survey found that Americans believe by a margin of 51% to 17% that the United States does too much, as opposed to too little, in helping solve world problems. It's got some people wondering if it's time to roll back our global military presence.
But our next guest argues that so-called hard power is a necessary tool in the country's foreign policy tool belt, and by pulling back, we risk more global conflict, especially as new and serious threats begin to emerge on the international scene.
Elliot Cohen joins us now. He's a professor of strategic studies at Johns Hopkins University's School of Advanced International Studies. He's a former counselor at the Department of State and the author of several books. His newest is The Big Stick, The Limits of Soft Power and the Necessity of Military Force. Elliot, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Before we get to the heart of your book, I wanted to throw in some current events. News today that some top State Department officials are out. It's been presented by the Trump administration as standard operating procedure. Some people have said no. Usually people in these posts stick around for a while in the transition. What are you making of this as you watch it?
Well, that's quite true. I mean, usually people do stick around. I know one of them quite well, Patrick Kennedy, was the undersecretary for management when I was there. You know, to lose one senior person, that's more or less normal. To have a whole bunch of them leave simultaneously is not good. I mean, there'll be other long-time career people who can fill some of the gaps. But I think it's an indication of what's going to be a very rocky time, particularly at the State Department and in some ways throughout the government.
And you made news a while back. You'd been in the Bush administration. You were what people had called a never Trump Republican or conservative over time. But you had said, hey, people in the foreign policy community still take jobs with this Trump administration. You changed your mind about that. Can you talk through that story?
Sure. Well, I was and I am a never Trumper, I guess. I was one of the ringleaders in two letters of former officials and conservative foreign policy and national security experts who were very critical of the president. My feeling once the election happened is, well, I was very unhappy that it turned out the way it did, but that they would need good help, and so that people should be willing under certain circumstances to go in, although, as I put it with your signed but undated letter of resignation in your the top drawer of your desk. And then I just had there were a number of things that happened. Part of it was just watching what the transition teams were like and listening to the rhetoric that came out of the Trump camp. And then I had one particular exchange with somebody who I thought I knew quite well on the transition team, which just really gave me the sense that this was a kind of an angry, vindictive, self-righteous group. And I have to say my views have not really changed that much. You know, I think there are some parts of the government, like the Defense Department, where I've got a very high regard for Secretary Mattis. I actually testified to the Senate to help change the law so he could become Secretary of Defense. But I think if you look at the White House and now at some of the things that are happening in the State Department, this is really what's going on is something that's just out of the norm. And it's very disturbing.
Let's get into the heart of your book here. And the big question is when? How often should the United States use military force? What kind of military presence should we have in the world? I think one of the cases Donald Trump made that seemed to appeal to people, and I think Bernie Sanders supporters maybe had a similar thought, was we shouldn't police the world. We shouldn't invest our resources to protect other people. We shouldn't risk American lives to protect other countries. As Donald Trump put it in his inauguration speech, we should stop worrying about them and think about America first. Make the case that that's not the way the United States should proceed.
Okay, well, the first thing, of course, as a lot of your listeners will know, that phrase America first is loaded. That was Charles Lindbergh's phrase when he was going after Franklin Roosevelt for trying to support Great Britain. And it has some pretty unsavory associations as well with pro-Nazi sympathizers. And I have to say, I think that they use that phrase deliberately with an awareness of the historical freight that it carries. There is absolutely a need for a serious argument. In fact, the first chapter of the book is called Why the United States, and I try to deal with a number of the arguments that have been advanced by all kinds of people on both left and right for why the United States should not be in the business of trying to help maintain world order. And the argument boils down to this, the argument for the United States maintaining that role. In the last 70 years, with all of our difficulties, with all the price that we've paid in blood and treasure, the world has seen spectacular prosperity, hundreds of billions, indeed billions of people coming out of poverty, tremendous prosperity for the United States, which is, after all, the wealthiest nation in the world. But none of that is automatic, and that was the product of statesmanship of both Republicans and Democrats ever since we got into World War II. And to throw that away is to really risk some very ugly things. I think one of the things that troubles me most is that we've lost a sense for what a real catastrophe could look like, the kinds of things that happened in the 1930s, except in some ways humanity can do a lot more damage to itself today with nuclear weapons than was possible even back then. So that's a kind of a shorthand version of a longer argument, which is really right at the outset of the book.
Talking to Elliot Cohen. His new book is The Big Stick, The Limits of Soft Power and the Necessity of Military Force. And Elliot, when people think of American military intervention these days, I think you might be right. They don't think back to what led up to World War II. The big example in recent memory is the Iraq War, the more recent of the two. And you were an advocate for that, and people look back and say we used intelligence that turned out not to be right, maybe prioritized the wrong intelligence. We went in thinking words like cakewalk, greeted as liberators. It ended up being, for many years, a quagmire, a longer involvement than we thought, a more damaging one, and now we have ISIS. How would you address those concerns? People say, look at Iraq. We shouldn't be having this aggressive, this powerful military presence.
Well, again, there's a longer discussion of that in a chapter called 15 Years of War, in which I really try to take on as honestly as I can the question of what should we take away from the experience of really three wars, which were linked in a variety of ways, the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, and the kind of global war against various jihadi elements. And you know, my bottom line on Iraq was taking one thing with another, I think. You know, my personal view is that it was a mistake, certainly, to do it the way we did it, although I understand what the argument's for. And it was not just – it was not simply driven, I think, by some of the intelligence failures. It was – terms like cakewalk, which I never used, were inappropriate. On the other hand, it is true we were greeted like liberators. I mean, if you were – you know, if you talk to anybody who served in the march up from Kuwait through places like Nasiriyah, that is the case. And I think the record in Iraq is actually pretty complicated. Moreover, I don't believe that Iraq had to turn out the way it turned out. You know, to support that, I would do is point to the judgment of some of the career diplomats who are actually not in favor of the Iraq War, but who knew that country well and who served there, people like Ambassador Ryan Crocker, Ambassador Jim Jeffrey. These are old Middle East hands. You know, their judgment in 2008, which was when I was in government and going to Iraq quite a bit, I would add, was that place was on a fragile trajectory to success. It didn't have to turn out the way that it turned out. But that's it. There's no question that it's been frustrating for people. I kind of push back on the term war weariness because I think you're entitled to be war weary if you serve there or if you have a family member who served there. And for sure, you know, if you're a family of somebody who fell or who was badly wounded or if you're in that position yourself. And the rest of us have not really paid a price for these wars. We haven't even paid it in taxes. But I think it is a more complicated record and was a more complicated war than people realize. This is the sort of thing that, frankly, we're only going to sort out with some considerable historical perspective. On the other hand, it's also important to remember that there are things that happen when you don't act. And for that, you need look no further than Syria, where essentially we did nothing. 500,000 dead, 12 million displaced people, a major destabilizing political crisis in the broader Middle East and indeed in Europe with refugee flows. The Russians reestablishing themselves in the Middle East and doing some terrible things as they do it. So, the dilemma of American power is not to act is a decision too, and it has consequences too. And that's we're just sort of stuck with that.
We're talking right now with Strategic Studies Professor Elliot Cohen. In his new book, The Big Stick, he argues that American military power remains crucial as ever, and makes the case that so-called hard power, military power, not soft power, is often what's needed to face today's biggest foreign policy challenges.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think America's role should be abroad? And do you agree with our guests about the need for a strong global military presence? And when it comes to the use of force, when should that be utilized and when shouldn't it? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're talking right now with Elliot Cohen, author of The Big Stick, The Limits of Soft Power and the Necessity of Military Force. He argues that American military power remains as crucial as ever, especially as new threats emerge on the global scene.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the United States maintain a strong military presence around the world and be ready, if the situation warrants, to use military force? When should we not do that? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Jeremy is on the line in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My concern is anytime you have a state that continues to build up a military power, such as the United States, such a manner and such a scale, it only produces a persona of aggression throughout the world. A lot of states around the world are trying to figure out, why is the United States rolling out 13 brand new carriers, new F-35 fighter jets? I mean, the scale of military buildup that we do in our country is just makes everybody else minuscule compared to what we do.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. I want to bring Elliot in on this. Jeremy's saying our military buildups inspire other countries to build up as much as they can in kind, maybe increasing tension.
Well, I guess I disagree for a number of reasons. I think first, if you simply talk to our allies in Europe, Britain or Poland, at the moment they're much more concerned about American retreat than anything else. And the same thing would go for the Japanese and the Australians and the Singaporeans, and I could go on and on. Second thing is that just factually not correct. I mean, the United States is not building 13 new aircraft carriers. We're actually have been slower in modernizing the equipment that we have than, say, the Russians or the Chinese. And one of the things I try to talk about in the book, but I've got a chapter on China, for example, the fact is the Chinese have been sinking really vast sums of money into brand new military technology. And it's probably a mistake for us to assume that we have this overwhelming edge. We don't. And that's actually going to be a very serious challenge for American defense planners going ahead. So it really isn't true that we've been engaged in anything remotely like a defense buildup. Actually, in many ways, we've been spending less than we need to. And other countries are indeed ramping up.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Charlie in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question for your guest is that it seems that a lot of the U.S. policies, from their trade deals to their military interventions and foreign policy interventions, have enriched the world as a whole. Yes, the global wealth has increased, and yes, many places on the earth have obviously done better. The real question, though, is that the reason for Trump's success is that a lot of people in America have been left behind. And that's where the anger comes from. And so while I don't disagree with the previous policies, how do we encourage and how do we bring up everybody else so that they feel part of the benefits and not just feeling the bad parts?
Charlie, thanks. So how do we sell the benefits of American military policy around the world to Americans, Elliot?
Well, I think there really are two issues. And I think, you've made a very powerful point, Charlie. The first is, I think we need to understand the United States is actually not spending, by historical standards, a disproportionate amount of money on defense. And the challenges that we face domestically are things that have to be addressed domestically, and they have to do with education, they have to do with all kinds of things that either foster or limit economic growth, automation factors, all sorts of things which are not really affected, actually, I think, by defense spending. But I think there's a larger point which you're raising, which, I try to talk about in the book, and that is, in a way, the debate we're now having about the use of American military power should have been triggered by the end of the Cold War. Because, after all, there was a kind of a consensus that we needed to stand up to the Soviets. But after the Cold War, it was perfectly legitimate to have that debate. We didn't have it because in the 1990s, predominance was cheap and the economy was flourishing. Then we had the emergencies of the early 2000s. So in a way, we're having a belated discussion about American foreign policy. And the truth is that I think our leaders on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, got lazy in terms of making the case to the American people why this is important. The fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, you know, I'm not trying to minimize the distress in some parts of the United States. The fact is we're an exceptionally wealthy country. We're the wealthiest in the world. And it's not as the choice is really a false choice between having a substantial military and a global role with domestic prosperity. I mean, we really managed it throughout most of the Cold War, for example.
Charlie, thanks for the call. We're talking to Elliot Cohen. His new book is The Big Stick, The Limits of Soft Power and the Necessity of Military Force. We go next to Rick on the line in Milwaukee. Rick, hi.
How you doing? So my father served in World War II. He was decorated. My uncles, et cetera, and I used to debate with them. One of the things that they brought up was the United States was becoming, and this is we're talking, when I was talking to them in the 80s, we're becoming like Rome. You know, if you ever read the book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, becoming imperialist, feeling that our way of life is the best, imposing on other people's cultures, trying to Americanize them. And again, causing more resentment than cooperation. So, you know, I guess to my point, there's a point where another foreign friend of mine said, we used to be like the big brother that protected them. Now we're like the big brother who turned into a bully. So I really feel we need to pull back a little bit and allow other cultures and other countries to take care of their own issues.
Rick, thanks. Elliot?
Well, again, you know, I point out the fact that our allies actually want more of a presence rather than less of a presence. I don't think we end up actually imposing our values on people the way some suggest. And to the extent we have an influence, it's quite often benign. Let me give you an example that people may not think about, and that is our relationship with Colombia, which has gone through this terrible civil war for almost 50 years, where the government has finally won against an extremely brutal organization, the FARC. And that was the reason for their success was their own efforts. But we played a very important role in supporting and training and advising the Colombian military. And Colombian generals will tell you that one of the benefits of the United States military training the Colombian military and being an example for them was actually limiting and driving down human rights abuses towards the local population. And, you know, the Colombian military ended up emulating a lot of American standards. It wasn't because it was imposed on them. It was because they were impressed by it. And the truth is also we, to some extent, our military aid was going to be conditional on certain things. So spreading certain kinds of military American values in that way is not entirely a bad thing.
Thanks again for the call. As we start to wrap up, Elliot, you point toward an alternative being America keeps its strong role in the world, or we risk anarchy and a lot of threats increasing and spiraling out of control. Lay out what you see as a worst case.
Well, the thing is, there is no power that can simply replace the United States as the kind of the leader of global order. I think instead what you'd be much more likely to get is a certain amount of chaos. We've already seen with Russia in the Ukraine, we've seen with China in the South China Sea, that there are plenty of countries which are willing to use force to get their way with their neighbors. And that'll have all kinds of consequences, the spread of nuclear weapons, and then I think eventually wars. You know, the thing I'd point out to people is this. There's no question, absolutely no question, that President Obama really wanted to retrench, was really averse to the use of military force, really thought he could end our wars. And yet, look what happened. He launched our third war in Iraq. He doubled down in Afghanistan. He vastly expanded a campaign of targeted killing against Al-Qaeda and similar groups. He deployed American ships near the Chinese islands in the South China Sea, and he's reintroduced substantial forces into Europe. Now, he's not doing this because he's a hypocrite, and he's not doing this – didn't do that because he didn't care about those values. He did. But I think what he found was that the logic of circumstances meant that he had to. And I think the choice that we're going to face is ultimately the choice that we faced in the 1930s. Do you get engaged early when the price is lower and your chance of success is greater? Or do you get engaged at the last minute when the price is a lot higher and the chances of success are a lot more uncertain?
We'll leave it there. Elliot, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure being with you.
We've been talking to Elliot Cohen. He's professor of strategic studies at Johns Hopkins University's School of Advanced International Studies and author of The Big Stick, Limits of Soft Power and the Necessity of Military Force. Still time to share your thoughts on this conversation over at the Central Time Facebook page. Do you agree with Elliot Cohen that the United States should keep a strong military presence around the world as a deterrent and possibly as a military response? Or do you think we should dial back and focus more on things here at home? Let the chips fall where they may around the world. And what are you hoping for or fearing from the new presidential administration of Donald Trump and his team? Again, you can share your thoughts. If you're brief, tweet us at Central Time WPR or post at whatever length you care to over on the Central Time Facebook page.